the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers, of course, your Arizona Cardinals. And with me tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, episode 513, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, my co-host, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original draft breakdown podcast. It is that time of year. We're talking draft stuff. In fact, I'm sure we will get, as the combine approaches, we will get it. This will be basically an extension of the draft podcast with me just kind of, you know, lurking as Seth and Justin Higdon, his co-host, talk about prospects and players as we approach the combine, whether it's before or after it. In this episode, Seth, we're going to talk a little bit about Cliff Kingsbury making the news. He's got a new job, and then the Senior Bowl. We'll go over kind of the players that stood out, any takeaways, if any of it means anything for the Cardinals. But Seth, Cliff Kingsbury was on track to be. Now, we talked about Cliff a few shows ago, how potentially. He interviewed with the Chicago Bears. He interviewed with the Eagles. There was interest with the Steelers. He was on track to get hired by the Raiders, and then he backed out. And then, almost immediately, he's the leading candidate with the Washington Commanders, and he lands with the Washington Commanders with Dan Quinn, the new head coach of the Commanders, and. It adds in a little bit of twist is the fact that Cliff gets to return to Arizona at some point this coming season because the Cardinals will host the Commanders in 2024. So there is that homecoming / revenge game that's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be fun. What was your initial, like, we talked about the whole thing about Cliff and Caleb Williams in Chicago or whatever. But what was your initial take on when the news hit that he backed out of the Raiders job?
I wasn't overly surprised. I mean, the situation wasn't ideal. How do you explain it? The Raiders situation's a tough one because they're obviously going with Antonio Pierce, and when guys lose the interim tag, it's not, I mean, what would you say? It's maybe 1 to 2 out of 10 that work out. I mean, and so that's not to say Antonio Pierce won't, and I know Arizona fans, especially ASU fans, have a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth from the whole situation with Antonio Pierce, but it's not an ideal situation, and then you add in that, you know, they're kind of in no man's land with quarterbacks, and you know, while they do have all their draft picks early in the process this year, getting up from 13 into what looks like the top 5 to 7, you know, that's going to handicap what you do to go get a quarterback, and so. It was an interesting decision in the first place to me to see Cliff want to go that route. And then, you know, to fall out of it and go more towards the Commanders, as you said, is it makes a little more sense. You know, obviously they have the second pick in the draft. So you look at it, they're going to have their choice of the three available quarterbacks that get mentioned all the time, you know, whether it's Caleb Williams, Drake May, or Jaden Daniels, you know, so two of those guys will 100% be available. I'm based on what we're hearing out of Chicago at this point. Did you see the Adam Schefter report that it's going to take 2 first-round picks to even get the conversation started? So I think what Chicago is trying to say is, we're not moving. We're taking Caleb Williams. And then the reports right now are, you know, they're going to be able to get a first round pick for Justin Fields. Now, I find that to be hullabaloo, but in a desperation scenario, you could see a team like, and obviously Las Vegas, probably not because they just hired Luke Getsy, his former offensive coordinator, right?
That would be hilarious.
But, I mean, you look at teams like, you look at teams and you see situations like Denver, Minnesota, you know, Atlanta, and maybe they could. Maybe it won't be a 2024 first-round pick, right? But maybe it'll be a 2025.
Ultimately, unless, like, if they play chicken long enough, because, I mean, now granted, Justin Fields is in a – he's shown more than Josh Rosen, but the Cardinals couldn't get a first, and Steve Keim wanted a first for Josh Rosen that back in 2019. Granted, Fields has shown more, but he's also in his fourth year, which is –
Yeah, payment. It's time for payment. And that's what people don't get about, I mean, not to make this a Justin Fields-based podcast, but that's what people don't get about the decision. Like, it's – if Matt Eberflus and company go in with Justin Fields as their quarterback, that's basically signaling, like, we're going – You know, we're either going in or out with this guy, right? Like,
yeah.
This
and here's the thing. They have to make the decision on whether to exercise the option on him.
Yeah, to exercise the option, they have to decide if this is really, you know, the guy. And they're hitching their wagon to this guy as well. So it's a difficult thing to do and just something I don't see them doing. And so them trading, resetting the market, Ryan Poles seems like a fairly intelligent guy. And so it seems like he would be smart enough to kind of read the room, right? And be like, hey, we probably should trade this guy and then figure it out from there. And so I think that's what they're going to end up doing. I think that they're going to end up with the first pick, and then they have the ninth pick. So for Washington and Cliff especially, yeah, you sit there and you take the next best guy and you have the grades, right? And you say, all right, if we gave Caleb Williams a 9, is Drake May an 8.5? Is Jane Daniels an 8.3? Like, who has the higher ceiling? You know, if it's me, I prefer Drake May, but that's because he's younger and I've seen a little bit more from him. Whereas, if it's Jaden Daniels, he's still only 23, so he's not in the Michael Penix, Bo Nix 24 age range yet. Obviously, he's had the most success from an individual standpoint, winning the Heisman this year. But so it'll be interesting to see how that folds. But isn't it interesting that the bigger offers, or maybe the more realistic offers, I don't know the proper way to phrase it, all came from teams that just don't have an answer at quarterback yet. Like he wasn't getting, it wasn't like a team like Chicago was like, hey, come fix Justin Fields, or a team like New Orleans was like, hey, come get, come work with Derek Carr. We need you to fix this, or Seattle or whoever had the OC openings, right? Like, It was guys that was it like, we don't know who's going to be our quarterback, so this is a guy.
Well, and here's the thing. I think there is a lot of – and I don't like it. There's a lot of Cliff hate out there, like even the talk that he keeps falling. If you want – there's a guy who has fallen upward multiple times, and that is not Cliff Kingsbury. But beside that, Cliff – What he hasn't done in the pros is worked with a veteran quarterback, right? And so he is known for developing quarterbacks. You can look at the work he did with Colt McCoy and as a veteran and say, okay, you can do that. But he's still known throughout the league as very bright in terms of offensive scheme, as working well with quarterbacks, like the quarterbacks that he worked with in college have all had done something, like the number of players that have done things in the pros, the development of Kyler Murray. Say how well, things ended, like, but that's just the thing is that like people think we know what led to the Raiders deal falling through. It was a security thing. Now I'm puzzled as to why there was so much. He's still got 4 years left on his Cardinals contract, but the Raiders were only offering him 2 years, and most assistant jobs are get three.
Right, and that was kind of my question too. Is the whole idea of it's the security. It's like, dude, you're getting paid whatever. if it's $5 million, you know, let's just say $5 million. If it's $5 million, dude, you're getting paid $5 million.
Right. It doesn't matter what he's making from the Raiders, for the Commanders. He's getting that amount, and maybe it was as simple as this. He was in line for the Raiders job, and then the Commanders job came up, and what the Raiders were offering made it easy to back out.
Yeah, and that might be it. I've thought a lot about it, and one of the situations that, and I'm one of those people that I wish everybody the best when they leave. I truly don't care. Like, it's not that I guess that's a bad way to say it. I don't actively root against anybody.
Unless they go to a rival. Don't go to the 49ers. Don't go to the Seahawks. Right. Don't go to the Rams.
Right. But I also don't cheer for you. Like, basically, it's like I have enough space in my brain to really focus on one team consistently. and that's the Cardinals, because all the other teams I'm focusing on are youth, so for me, like, the whole Cliff thing, like, my buddies that follow college football really well are like, man, Caleb Williams really took a step back this year, you know, do you think that hurts Cliff? And I'm like, I don't know, I didn't watch it. Literally, I think I watched one USC game all season.
Well, and like, I'll say this, because what I saw out of Caleb Williams in the one game that I watched, that was when he was at ASU, he put up monster numbers. He himself did not have an impressive game, but he didn't have to do much. You know, Caleb is a fantastic quarterback, but USC's defense was so bad.
Yeah, it was really bad, man.
So bad.
And so going back to Cliff, my thought process is, and I think you kind of would agree with me, my thought process is his offense is, it tends to do a really nice job in a number of scenarios and situations, and make things easy for quarterbacks. As you said, it kind of peters out. That's not to say that it definitely will or anything like that, but it tends to kind of peter out, right, as things go along. And so for that situation, you would kind of look at it and go, hey, this is a guy that, you know, is perfect to, especially early, come in, kind of, maybe ease is the wrong word, but kind of bring these guys up to speed, so to speak, before, and I'm not saying it would definitely happen, but before maybe you go into a different area, right? Like, and find a different coach to kind of carry you through to the next stage of your career. And Cliff early in those scenarios would, you know, be ideal, you would think, for a Drake May or a Jaden Daniels, with, you know, kind of his, how he coaches in his system, because we've seen it be successful, right?
Yeah,
so why not do that early for a guy, and then kind of, you know, if needed, pull back later on. So that's where I kind of looked at the whole situation. I'm just like, oh, this isn't a bad fit for him. This is actually a really nice fit for him.
Well, look at the talent that he's got. They do have, like, they're going to have a young quarterback. They're going to have a what should be a promising quarterback. They've got Terry McLaurin. They've got good offensive pieces. And what we saw here in Arizona, when they had offensive problems, it was mainly, was it not, when they were short on talent. And
right. It felt like 1,000%.
It felt like he couldn't, like, this offense that he runs is more dependent on talent than perhaps other schemes. Like if what Drew Petsing did, like the West Coast based offense, is that they managed to be productive late in the season with nothing. That's not true. James Conner was a beast, and Trey McBride became a beast. But it I don't know. It feels like it is more kind of like in college, that college offense where you talent your way out. Like, you just have more talent, you're going to do stuff. And that's kind of it. But let's be honest, the way other people and players talk about Cliff Kingsbury as an offensive mind, like, you can't discount that, because people around the league aren't dumb. Like, if players like playing in Cliff's offense, and DeAndre Hopkins loved that offense, Kyler loved, you know, Zach Ertz liked it, the offensive players like the offensive system, I think the failures of Cliff Kingsbury were less schematic and more about accountability, as we found out later on. And if he's working within the accountability system of another coach, I have no problem with Cliff Kingsbury as the head coach. He proved, like, I think people are underestimating what he did in Arizona in terms of value. He took a garbage team, took them in 3 years to the playoffs, and things fell apart. But they're like, people know that, like, this is the Cardinals. It's the Cardinals. And so it's, yes, while things failed wonderfully bad that last season, people remember the fact that he took a team and built it up. So it's not like he's been a failure. The end was a failure. He developed Kyler Murray. There could have been more. And so I really think it's disingenuous by a lot of people to talk about Cliff as a failure as a coach. He's not, his offense isn't that good. He's not a good coach. He's not a good play caller. There were a number of things offensively that they improved year over year on. And let's let this play out, because, you know, a guy that had the success that he did with Arizona, who's had success with quarterbacks who have been very good quarterbacks in the NFL, you give those guys a chance. And so he will be working in Dan Quinn's system, like within the framework that he sets up as a culture. And so all he has to worry about is scheme and quarterbacks, basically, which might be ultimately what, now, obviously, as a guy who was a head coach, you want to coach, you want to be that guy that you've got an ego about it. And he knows how to coach. He knows how to manage players. But this is, you know, this is the next best thing, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to put it. It's the next best thing for him. It's kind of optimal for where he's at in his career. And to get back on track, because he just was so, like, the end was so ugly. And, you know, it was one of those kind of situations where the ending of his time was probably weighs more heavily than what he did during his stay, if that makes sense, right? Like, ended up being
worse. It's the recency bias.
Right. Ended up being a lot worse than it should have been, and that was because the end was so, you know, bad, and they needed to do something different and move on. And more than anything, you know, unfortunately for him, it was a culture thing. And he just, that's not, like you said, that's not really his strength. And that's not to take a shot at him, but he's kind of a guy that trusts everybody to be adults and do their job. And you and I work in fields, you know, that you would expect that to be something that should go without saying.
Right.
Right.
Like, you should be able to tell these professional players, hey, this is your job. Do it.
Right. But for some reason, there needed to be an accountability, and he was just unable to provide that, something he wasn't. And a lot of times it's because you set the culture, right? So like 19 and 20 and 21, you're like, hey, we're all adults, like, let's just do our job. And then in 22, when it gets bad, you're like, oh crap, and it's too late to
roll it back. You can't, like,
right.
Yeah, you're only going to be able to do what you've already done. But yeah.
And so, like you said, I think that it's hopefully a good fit. It's going to end up, you know, working out for him. It's going to end up being one of those situations where he's successful. But I'll tell you this, my concern has a lot less to do with Cliff Kingsbury and a lot more to do with the Commanders in general and things of that nature, you know, and they're full on
Dan Quinn, a failed head coach before, but also a guy that took a team to the Super Bowl,
right?
But also a failed head coach.
Their response to the Ben Johnson debacle has been nothing short of, I mean, let's be honest, embarrassing, right? And it's not, again, not anything that Cliff or, you know, Dan have anything to do with, but it's, you know, it's a really bad look.
Aren't we familiar with that here?
Yeah. And that was kind of my point. Like, you know, everybody was excited about Matt Harris. And again, I just genuinely do not have the time, to care about the NBA, even the Phoenix Suns, unfortunately. But, you know, everything I've heard is that, you know, while they like to spend money, that Harris group, they haven't been the best owners in Philadelphia. And all I see is that Philadelphia is good every year. So, again, I'll take the people that are a little more dialed in than myself, in that case. But it is interesting, right, that his options, again, not a shot at Cliff, just kind of thinking about it, again, no established quarterback in you know, the Raiders and the Commanders, not is exactly the Steelers, you know, or the Seahawks, who have been
his coaching options were also the Cardinals and Jets, so
right. No, and that's my point is, like, and so that's where Cliff is, unfortunately, right now. And so we'll see how it kind of moves forward and stuff, because it hasn't worked out, you know, the way he'd wanted. And I would say in his last 2 years, because I don't think USC exactly went how he envisioned or had hoped it would. So, you know, like I said, I think you and I are pretty open about this. We have, like, zero ill will towards Cliff. We want to see nothing but success from him. And anybody that leaves here with, you know, on mostly good terms, but we also are at the point where we're like, hey, it's over and done with now. Good luck, Cliff, and we'll see how it works out for you.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Mr. Cardinals talking about, we're going to move on and start talking about NFL draft. We've got the Senior Bowl results, players to talk about. We'll talk about the offensive players first. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best served Cardinals talk on the web. The Senior Bowl. We had the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl last week, and I suppose we can throw some Shrine Bowl talk a little bit as well. But, you know, the Senior Bowl isn't nearly about the game as it is about the practices leading up, as it is the last All-Star Bowl. You get, you know, where we have all the tape of the players during the season, but now you have all these NFL draft prospects in one place. So it's more like an NFL setting, not completely, but it's good on good, rather than the tape you get sometimes against your directional state colleges that you play early in the season. And players stand out. There was a lot of buzz about a lot of players. And interestingly enough, if we talk about the Senior Bowl, I think perhaps the player on offense that got the most buzz is a player that's probably not going to – I'm not sure if his draft status will even impact the Cardinals in any way, and that would be, you know, the local kid, Spencer Rattler, who shone far and above the other quarterbacks in the Senior Bowl involved. Now, granted, they did not have – Caleb Woolidge wasn't there. Drake May wasn't in the Senior Bowl. Jaden Daniels. But you had a group with, you know, Bo Nix and Michael Penix and Sam Hartman, Carter Bradley. And it was Rattler that was so far and above everybody else. A guy that began his college career very highly touted. There was a one point where it looked like he was on track to be a Caleb Williams type number one pick overall. And then he got benched for Caleb Williams in a game in which they were winning. His career didn't go in college the way it would seem, but as a development, as a player, he stood out. And I don't know what your take is on this. What do you think that did for him? And he only had the one drive, the touchdown, he ended up with the MVP. He was the top player, top quarterback mentioned. What do you think that does to his draft stock? Will that do enough to push him up into that first-round status? Because I think when it comes to that, I think the only way that it impacts the Cardinals in terms of draft is if he gets up in the first round, because the Cardinals also have the 27th pick. They've got the early second-round pick. And after that, I don't think really any quarterback picks are going to really impact what the Cardinals do in the draft.
No, I don't think so. And, you know, you look at Rattler, like you said, he was kind of the big winner from this weekend, and he showed a lot of good things. And he showed that he has that talent still in him. You spelled it out well. He was a top quarterback prospect, you know, coming out of local Pinnacle, obviously got into some trouble. Then he had a fantastic redshirt freshman or sophomore year. I don't remember coming out to be, or when that was, to be completely honest. And we have to remember, like, he was the odds on Heisman. So I think he was a redshirt sophomore when he had his little breakout. And then he was like the odds on favorite to win the Heisman and be the first overall pick in the draft in, I want to say, 3 years ago. I'm double checking.
I think it'd been 2 years ago.
Coming out of 2020, the 2022 draft, but going into the 2021 college football season. Because this is a guy that, again, 28 touchdowns to 7 interceptions as a redshirt freshman. So, you know, his redshirt sophomore year, his third year in college, the expectations were high. And the ironic thing was, it wasn't even like he was bad. It was just that Caleb Williams was so good that it was like, oh, you didn't live up to it. I mean, this is a guy that completed 75% of his passes for over 1,400 yards, 11 touchdowns with 5 interceptions in 9 games. You know, not great numbers, but good. But the big thing was that yard per attempt went down from 9.5 to 7.9. I mean, that's a massive, massive drop off. And then he kind of scuffled his junior year, and in senior year, he had a nice rebound this year, but it was the Senior Bowl. You're like, oh yeah, that was, that guy was really good. And he was on pace to be, I'm looking now, he was the number one quarterback in the country. He was the number 9 overall prospect in 2019. I mean, and listen to the names ahead of him. Derek Stingley, pretty sure he was a top 5 pick, so that guy was good. DeMarvin Leal, I'm pretty sure he went day 2 of the draft. Nolan Smith, he was a first-round pick. Trevon Walker, he was the first overall pick. Kayvon Thibodeaux, he was a top 5 pick. Charles Cross, he was a top 10 pick. So Spencer Rattler was in that class. Like, Spencer Rattler was the top quarterback in that class. So again, just to come out and remind people, like, oh damn, this kid could play. And he just, like you said, he transferred because he got benched and he just knew that his time in Oklahoma was over. I mean, we're talking about Caleb Williams as the number one pick. Like, you got to go find something else at that point. It worked out for Jalen Hurts, and I don't want to compare it because their games are completely different, but you could see something similar to that. I was talking to some people that had, you know, brought up, hey, what do you think of Rattler, you know, in that round four, right? With one of those round four picks for the Cardinals. And I, you know, before I was like, you know, whatever. I don't get too hot and bothered by those, you know, 100 plus picks. If they're lottery tickets, you and I talk about it all the time, right? How do you want to play the lottery that day? You want to go big and go for a quarterback, or you want to go low risk and take a, you know, a defensive tackle, which is typically what they do, right? And and hope that they stay on a roster for 4 years. And that's what you do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so, and then coming out of the Senior Bowl, I text the same people and I say, well, he ain't going to make it out of the top 100 at this rate. So, you know, are you willing to use pick 90? I don't think anybody is. And that's not a shot at Spencer. I think he's worth it. But, you know, is it worth it for what the Cardinals need? You and I would definitely agree no, right?
No, I would look at that. I would look at a pick. Like when the Cardinals picked Clayton Tune last year, I thought that was a waste of a pick when they could have done other things. But I get it, but I still thought it was a waste of a pick personally.
Right. So offensively, you know, obviously you mentioned it. He's the first guy. But the next guy, and you know, I wanted to go over a couple mock drafts because this goes to a bigger thing. Tyalese Fuaga, the Oregon State offensive tackle, a guy that we've talked about on the show. I've told you, if he was there at pick XYZ, you know, I think he'd be the perfect fit for the Cardinals, right? Like, ideal for the Cardinals to come in, be the right tackle. You kick Paris over to the left side and you go from there. And again, ideal, but based on, and mocks are just that, they're mocks, but a lot of times it's what they're hearing, right? It's guys like Matt Miller, Daniel Jeremiah, Lance Zierlein, they're kind of openly discussing what they're hearing. Fuaga went 10th in Miller's newest mock draft that he put out on Monday. So again, we're talking pre-mock or pre-Senior Bowl. That guy was consistently available in the back end of round one. You know, he was going from that 24 to 31, 32 range pretty consistently. So you had Fuaga at 10, and then in Lance Zierlein's mock draft that he dropped yesterday, I believe he was like 7th, which again, like, I'm a huge fan, so I'm not gonna knock that. Right. I think that
leads to the tackle class of what the buzz that there I wrote about it. It was something that Jeremy Fowler said in their Senior Bowl buzz article for ESPN. And, you know, they're saying that right now you could be looking at as many as 8 tackles taken in the first round, which is like a premium position. That's still absurd. Like 6, I think, is the record. But there are some really good ones between Joe Alt and the kid out of Penn State. You've got Fuaga. It's just, you know, even the guys like Guyton and Morgan out of Arizona. It's just like there's tackle after tackle after tackle that you are like, yeah, those are guys are really good. Which leads to, you know, as we get closer to the draft, is like if Hart Harrison isn't there, if it doesn't go the way, like, or if the Cardinals see a little more value in adding something later, you might see like a tackle, like crazy. We might see a tackle pick for the Cardinals 2 straight years in the top 10. It's that type of class, right?
Right. Well, and that's, so I need to, you know, correct myself. I knew Zierlein had him high. I forgot. Zierlein had him not just high. He had him as the first offensive tackle taken. So he had him going 6th overall to the Giants.
That feels, doesn't that feel a little bit, it just feels in the moment? right? Prisoner of the moment kind of thing. Because what you got does, guys like Alton.
But like that's the kind of show he put on at the Senior Bowl. I mean, he was playing bully ball with people. Like he was legitimately just dominating guys, and that's kind of crazy to think about, right? Like that this is the best player at an all-star game, and I know not everybody's there and blah blah blah, but you know, and then you look at it, Daniel Jeremiah in his top 50 has him at 11. Yeah. So, and that was pre Senior Bowl. So like that is like all putting all the pieces together. Fuaga, not an option unless the Cardinals trade back, right? Like he's just not an option. So we can get over that, that pipe dream. But I mean, it was fun while it lasted. And also it was cool while it lasted because he was obviously, we weren't seeing things. We weren't deceived by the reality. You mentioned a name that I think needs to be talked about. Tyler Guyton, the Oklahoma tackle. I think people are going to fall in love with him. And I'm really excited when we talk to Sully this year on the podcast to hear what his thoughts are, because he kind of reminds Justin and I a little bit of Tyler Smith, the fine offensive tackle for the Cowboys that came out, and everybody was kind of like, you're taking Tyler Smith in the first round? And now people are like
I get it.
Yeah, well, not only that, but people are like, you got to steal Tyler Smith, you know, wherever he went. And, you know, it was in the 20s. It's like, oh, yeah. So that's the thing. It's like people always want to go overboard, right? They always want to go like, oh, this guy wasn't as good as we thought he should be, and so therefore we're going to, you know, we're going to knock him. But, you know, Guyton, we're talking about a guy that played, you know, 600 and over 600 snaps this season at right tackle. Last season, you know, for Oklahoma, he played 50 snaps at left tackle and 350 snaps at right tackle. So, you know, you're just talking about a guy that can play. He came in massive, just massive, at 6'7", 328 pounds. And he moves just so, so well and so smoothly. And so, again, if you're talking about the end of round one and people are going, you know, if people are like, well, he's not a finished product, we can't afford to take him. Other teams are saying this, and you're Arizona, and you're like, we got Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4, or, you know, traded down and added, you know, a Malik Nabers or Romo Odunze or Dallas Turner or Terrion Arnold, right? And then we got a second round pick. Let's take a shot on this Guyton guy. Like, I think he's a day one starter at right tackle in the NFL. He's definitely going to have some ups and downs, just like Paris did this year. I mean, it's a different sport, you know, even though it's the same game, it's a different sport. And, you know, he's a guy that comes in and I think really kind of can solidify the tackle position going forward. And quite frankly, I don't even know if he gets there, man. Like 27 seems almost like a pipe dream at this point for him.
What about Jackson Powers Johnson? He was another offensive lineman that were there. It was just like, you know, what was the comments? Like, you put him in the starting lineup, like as a rookie, and he's already a top five center.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting because he's played guard. Obviously the Cardinals, you and I've talked about it. You probably are okay with Yelda Froholt. And so if you come in and you give him the Cam Jurgens treatment that Philly's kind of given Jurgens there, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, I know people will be like, oh, if you take him, you know, at 27, don't you play him at center from the beginning? It's like,
maybe.
I mean, if
Froholt could play guard too, but if you've already got an established center, why not?
Right. And then you can make the move next year. And because the thing people don't get about the center position isn't just the blocking, right? Like the blocking is important, but it's all the calls that these guys have to make too. And so that is just putting a lot of pressure on a guy from Jump Street. And not everybody handles that well, not to say that Jackson Powers Johnson wouldn't. I think he's a legitimate day one pick, or, you know, day one starter without any issue, but you know, it is a lot to put on somebody. So we'll see how that goes. You know, another guy that had a great week that I've talked about a lot is Malachi Corley. Like, this is a guy that
played at Western,
that played at Western Kentucky, kind of the depth of this class that you kind of hit on at offensive line. So, you know, we talked about Huaga, we talked about Guyton, we talked about Powers Johnson, you know, three guys that are going to end up going in the first round. So there has to be day two picks, and there's obviously day two linemen and things like that. But for the Cardinals, they need something at wide receiver, right? We don't know if that's going to be at four. We don't know if that's going to be at 27, 35, or if it's, you know, in round three. But Corley kind of cemented himself as one of is like the top big slot guy in this class, right? Like, he is a tank. I mean, he's built like Anquan Boldin. He's shorter at 5'10", but I think he came in at 217. I mean, he is just kind of a different breed than anything the Cardinals have right now at wide receiver. So again, it's not necessarily that you're like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, they should take him at 27, but if you are able to get him, you know, with a pick, you know, at 66 or 71, and you can get a different type of receiver than what you already have, man, that's a great fit. But yeah, he had a nice week. He is, and again, you don't ever want to give a guy too high of a praise, but like, his high end could be similar to like what Deebo Samuel is, right? Like a big slot guy that runs over around and through people. And then you had the opposite side of it. Still a great weekend. But Roman Wilson, the wide receiver out of Michigan. And you know, Justin and I talked about it after we saw him and how well he played. And it's like, I think the week that Roman Wilson had says more about JJ McCarthy than it does about Roman Wilson, right? Like, Wilson came out, he's kind of one of those Jags that we talk about sometimes in terms of size. And that's, you know, that's going to be his, I don't want to say downfall, but he, you know, he's literally just.
Yeah, because there's like all those receivers that are around 5'11", 195 pounds. That's what all the receivers, so you have to have something else.
Yeah, and he was smooth all weekend. I mean, he had a great weekend in terms of route running, in terms of separation. He kind of showed himself to be, you know, a Chris Olave type of guy. You know, nothing flashy, just a guy that gets open consistently. You know, obviously I don't think he's going to go 12th overall, but he could have a Chris Olave, Terry McLaurin type of career where you're talking about a guy that ends up being a really, really good wide receiver. And then I think the one other guy, I mean, we could talk about everybody. Obviously everybody loved Ladd McConkey. Again, another one of those Jag guys in terms of size, 5'11", 187, but was open all weekend. But another guy that really interested me, and a guy that played with a similar type of quarterback to Kyler Murray, was Brendan Rice, the local product. Yes, son of Jerry Rice. Yes. So obviously,
like, mind you, guys, you know, everyone's talking about Marvin Harris. There are three heritage receivers in this draft. I mean, yes, you've got Marvin Harrison Jr., you've got Brendan Rice, you've also got Luke McCaffrey. What is this? What is this year? I feel old.
Nepotism, bro. I'm just kidding. But you look at it, and Rice, you know, he's not a guy that you look at and you go, oh, he's the number one receiver, but he is a guy that you look at and go, oh, this is a guy a lot like Michael Wilson, just a little bit thicker and a little more healthy. And so, you know, if you could get another Michael Wilson and a guy that can stay on the field consistently, and then Michael Wilson can stay on the field consistently, you're like, hey, this is an improved wide receiver room. Yeah, it's not as flashy as adding a Marvin Harrison or Neighbors or a Tunze, but it's a good addition. So I thought Rice played well. You know, the running backs, I think they're going to draft one. You know, we've talked about it. Everybody had their moments. Kamani Vidal is the one that really interested me from Troy. 5'7" and a half, but 215 pounds. So it's like, oh, this is a guy that can come in and kind of fit with what they want to do from a power standpoint. You know, obviously not as big as James Conner, but when you're talking about, you know, 5.5 to 6 inches shorter than Conner, but only 15 pounds lighter, they're built very similarly, right? Like, and so, you know, Vidal looked the part, moved well. You know, this is a, like I said, this is a good class. Ray Davis was another guy that looked really good. And those are all guys that, you know, are going to be, in my opinion, available in that 104, 136 range, which is where I think you take running backs, unless you're going to, you know, go with the Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan Robinson and give them, you know, 250 touches immediately right off the bat type of thing. So offensively, having Chris Cook there, I thought was a huge thing because he got an up close look at Efuaga. Obviously he didn't deal with Guyton, but I'm assuming there was enough crossover. You know, I've never been behind the scenes on how the coaching aspect goes of those things, but I'm assuming you get good information from the other coaches about the other roster. Right. So, you know, so there was guys there, and then on the defensive side of the ball, there's a ton to talk about next, right?
Yeah. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking about, let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. What was there to like? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Defensive players there were two names, and I read a little bit about what players stood out, and then there was the game as well. What, to me, there were two guys that stood out for me. Just, you know, not the super draft guy. But one would be Braden Fisk, and the other is Quinyon Mitchell, right?
Yeah, and both at positions of need for the Cardinals. Fisk was the first guy in history to get traded.
Right, he changed squads. And then dominated.
Right? He was like, oh, this is what you guys get. Fisk is he's a super intriguing guy, man. Because he, ironically, he's built like me. He's about an inch taller than I am. He's 6'3", about 30 pounds heavier than I am, 295, but short arms, but really broad barrel chested, 31 inch arms, but 77 and a half inch wingspan. So when you're talking about short arms like that, but then you get into the same wingspan as guys with longer arms, you're just talking about a guy that's just got a thick chest across. And man, he showed up in workouts and one-on-ones. The arms show up. I mean, it definitely does. And he's a guy that, you know, you look at a J.J. Watt, you look at a Cam Jordan, obviously Calais Campbell. He is not those guys. He doesn't play that way. He doesn't have the physical stature to do what they do. Even at 6'3 and a half, I mean, this is a tall guy. But the arms limit him. But what he does well is he's so good with leverage. So good with leverage. And he's so quick that he plays himself into a position where he's consistently winning and he's not having to worry about the shortcomings, no pun intended, with the arm length. That's a big deal because, you know, for a lot of teams, that 31-inch arm for an interior defensive lineman would just kind of be a deal breaker, right? Like, you'd be like, it just doesn't have it. But he knows how to manipulate and use angles and get his hands into position where it doesn't become an issue. And so for that reason, you know, I thought he played really well all weekend, and then, like you said, came into the game, switched teams. I think he finished with 4 tackles, 1.5 for loss, and 0.5 sack. I mean, that's a good day at the office for a guy that hadn't even worked with the defense that he played on. You mentioned Quinwon Mitchell, man. I mean, this guy picked every single box he needed to tick, and I'm gonna guess played himself out of being available.
He's not gonna be there at 27, is he?
No, I don't think so at this point. So, you know, it's a little disappointing. I mean, it's never disappointing that a guy plays so well that you're like, right? But for the most part, I mean, this is a guy that he's going to work. I think when he goes in that 18 to 22 range, there's going to be a lot of questions about why a team let a Jacksonville, a Cincy, a LA, a Pittsburgh, especially if he ends up in Pittsburgh, right? And then he's like a 7-time all pro there, but why teams let him slide down that far. And I get it, man. I mean, Toledo is not a powerhouse. They don't exactly play a juggernaut schedule, but I mean, this guy was clearly the best cover guy the entire weekend. He was phenomenal, and he gave every receiver that he came up against problems consistently. You really just have to admire what he did all weekend. And again, selfishly, you're like, sucks that the Cardinals probably just won't have a chance to even draft this guy, unless, you know, they get a little creative and they throw, you know, that extra third, or sorry, the late third in there with maybe, you know, a 7th, and kind of move up from 27. And if he falls into that 22, 23 range, right. Another guy that, man, at 27, all of a sudden, and again, you have to shout out Daniel Jeremiah. He's clearly the most dialed in guy in terms of I know he does a lot of his own scouting, so I don't want this to come off as, you know, anything negative, but that guy has his ear to the ground and knows what's going on. And when he dropped his big board before the Senior Bowl, and that's why he does it that way, so he can kind of give people a heads up of what he's hearing. And then it comes back and you go, Darius Robinson at 32, what are you talking about? And then you go to the Senior Bowl and who is a universal winner across the board? Darius Robinson. And man, that guy got some compliments that will make people blush. Probably overdo it in terms of expectations, which, you know me, I always hate that, right? Like, I always hate when guy they go a little too far, but
his comp is Barry Sanders. No, don't do that.
Yeah, right. But I think what he did this weekend has solidified him as a back end of round one type of guy. And Robinson came in, and he is a prototype 34 power defensive end with the way he came in. He came in at 6'5" flat, 286 pounds with almost 35-inch arms and an 84.5-inch wingspan. So I talked about Fisk, you know, having short arms, 77.5-inch wingspan. Robinson's is 7 inches longer. On only a 1.5-inch frame taller. The comps, man, the comps from the size, obviously we got to get him tested, see how he looks out, works out, but the comps for the size come in at Cam Jordan, and that is, it, I mean, if he comes in at 75% of Cam Jordan's career, whoo boy,
that's a really good career.
Yeah, and so you look at him. I think you look at him. You look what he has the ability to do, where he's at. You know, I think at 27, he could be a guy that really fits what this defense so desperately needs. And then a couple other guys just real quick on the defensive side of the ball. The first one, a guy I've loved for, I feel like, a decade now. I don't know how long he's been in college, but it definitely feels that long. Peyton Wilson of NC State, to see him finally healthy, to see him get through not only, you know, his senior season, but then to play as well as he did at the Senior Bowl, it really checks all the boxes that you want. And he's a guy that he's got shoulder and knee issues. So it's one of those things where I talked about those lottery tickets, right, and with day three. I'm not touching this guy from pick 4 to 90. I'm just not interested. If they do, I'm going to love the pick. I 100% think he can be, I mean, he's 6'4", 235, incredibly athletic and incredibly instinctual. He is just a dog at linebacker. But with those medicals, man, it makes it a lot tougher. However, if you can get him in the right spot, then I really think he would just kind of help this defense. I know we're sick of drafting inside linebackers, but if you get him on day three at 104 and that lottery ticket hits to, you know, three full seasons and one, you know, partial type of season with him, man, you're talking a guy that if he was healthy and didn't and because we're not talking one injury, we're talking multiple shoulder and knee issues, which makes him, you know, a really tough person to draft. But if you get him, like I said, at 104, you could be talking about a guy that, again, people are going to be like, why did you let him fall? And then he'd be like, oh yeah, I forgot his shoulders are made of paper mache. Like, it's not ideal. And then a guy, again, I got guys I love this year, and then they went out to the Senior Bowl and basically kind of just did what they've been doing on film all year. Ironically, the one guy that decided he was just not going to weigh in. I mean, you can look at him, and he's big, and that's really all you need to worry about. That's T'Vondre Sweat of Texas. I love this guy, man. One of my absolute favorite players in this draft. Listed at 365 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
He moves like a bear for his size. I mean, he's just... He is a massive, massive human being. I don't know if the weight was why he decided he wasn't going to weigh in. You can ask him if you ever get to meet him. I'm not going to bother him with that. That seems like something that I don't want to deal with. But, I mean, this guy is, like I said, he is just a massive, massive human being. He was the Outland Trophy winner. And obviously, and his official weight was 362 pounds. So I don't want to overdo it. You know, 6'4", 362. I don't want to give him 3 extra pounds. That's rude. But when you talk about a guy at that size that comes in, is obviously a phenomenal run stopper, right? You put him in the middle of your defense and you're like, hey, there you go. But he had 22 pressures from the interior, which I think would have led the Arizona Cardinals this year, if I remember right.
Yeah, probably. Quit mentioning that detail.
but I mean, 6'4", 362 to be that agile. And I know Byron Murphy Jr. or the second, however, whatever he likes to go by. No, not the corner. There is a Byron Murphy that's coming out as well.
Yep.
From Texas. And I know he's kind of the speed demon interior guy at a light 6'3", 297, you know, compared to 6'4", 362. But I'm telling you, Sweat is just a different type of guy. And he's the guy that, you know, I wouldn't hate at 35. I have a problem, as people know, with the defensive lineman picks, just because they usually take 1 to 2 years to develop, and they just, you know, you rarely see them get over 50% of the snaps until year three. So when you pick a guy that high, the production just never gets to where the value is that early, which is why I'm hoping that a guy like Sweat could fall to that pick 66. If you could get him at 66, oh man, that would be a dream, because you're talking about obviously the biggest guy on the defensive line immediately for the Cardinals, but you're talking about a guy that just has that two-way ability that's so rare in guys that size. And you know, if you end up with that, you feel like immediately that the defense can find its footing and have guys ready to help out. And so that's the, you know, that's the dream. And by the way, we barely hit the tip of the iceberg. There's so many guys that we can talk about. This could be a 5-hour show, man. But yeah, the reason,
and we'll definitely get more of those. Later this month, when you go combine, we will do two separate shows. We'll do offense, and we'll see if we can get Seth and Justin on, so we'll do one just offense and one just defense, and maybe we might need to split that up. Split that up as well.
But it's also why all these sites do a top 5 or top 10, right? Like if you go through and you look at Senior Bowl winners, it's not 52 guys. It's 5 or 10. And there were more than 5 or 10 winners there. But, you know, we hit the ones that mattered. We hit the ones that Jess and I feel like could fit with the Arizona Cardinals, that could be, especially, you know, like we said, with the coaches that were there, that were able to see these guys up close and personal, the needs of the team, and guys that fit where they go. And you know, it's something that we'll continue to talk about over the next 78 days, because that's when the NFL draft is. But it's really interesting that, and whether it was the foresight or just blind luck, even with that pick ending up at 27, isn't it really interesting that the needs of the Cardinals really fit in well with the talent of this 2024 NFL draft class? I do think it has something to do with the foresight of Monty. I really think he was like, no, this is, you know, I see where the needs are going to be this year and next year, and I want to kind of put my eggs in that basket. And just to see this class as it's starting to kind of come into focus, you know, the guys we talked about tonight, literally this is just the Senior Bowl, guys. Like, this is just Senior Bowl, and you can make an argument that you can draft your first, you know, from 4 to 104, all from Senior Bowl, without reaching, without picking a guy too high, and getting what you need, and getting, you know, high end fits at all these places. And so that's, you know, that's what's exciting about this class overall, and what should excite fans about what Monty did last year to get them into this spot this year, even though we had to deal with what was obviously a very rough season of NFL.
And with that, we'll end this edition of episode 513 of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. We'll be hopefully back in a couple of days to talk more Cardinals, offseason, whatever it is. Like, there's we'll definitely talk Super Bowl, make some predictions that way. We've got picks and props for that game. But that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. It's the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, even though we went a little bit past an hour. So it's the best a little bit more than an hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Again, Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Team Red! Rise!